Hi, everyone. Okay. So this talk is going to be about understanding ephemeral storage requirements for serverless analytics. And this is joint work with Yawen Wang and Christos Kozirakis at Stanford, and our collaborators Patrick, Jonas, and Animesh at IBM Research in Zurich. Serverless computing enables users to simultaneously launch thousands of tasks, otherwise known as lambdas. And so the main advantages are high elasticity, meaning applications can go from one to thousands of threads in a matter of seconds, and fine-grained resource billing, meaning users are only charged for the resources their applications actually consume, and this is done at a fine time granularity of hundreds of milliseconds. Now, while the first applications to benefit from serverless computing have been IoT and event-driven web microservices, this fine-grained resource billing and high elasticity make serverless computing for a much broader range of applications, including interactive analytics. So there's been a lot of existing and ongoing work on platforms that enable real-time analytics for videos, and we'll look at some examples of applications in this talk. Now, the challenge with running data analytics on lambdas is that these workloads typically involve multiple stages of execution and the communication of intermediate data between these stages. So what this means is if we want to run analytics workloads on lambdas, these lambdas need a way of communicating with each other for these intermediate results. And we refer more broadly to this intermediate data as ephemeral data, which simply means short-lived. This data typically only needs to live for the duration of the job itself. Now, in traditional analytics frameworks like Spark, for example, the way data exchange happens is as follows. We have mapper tasks, for example, that write their intermediate data to local storage. And then the reduce tasks can fetch this data directly over the network. But in the serverless analytics context, the story is a bit different because direct communication between lambdas is actually quite difficult. And there's a couple of reasons for this. So lambdas are short-lived. For example, on Amazon Lambda, their execution is capped to a maximum of 5 minutes. And they're also stateless. So when mappers are running and some of them exit, their local file system and any data stored there is lost. So any producers that want to read this data don't have a way to access it. And furthermore, users actually have no control over how these lambdas are scheduled. So we, for example, don't know the IP address behind which these tasks are sitting. So because it's hard to directly communicate between lambdas, the natural approach for sharing data is through a common data store. So we would have mappers writing their intermediate data to a distributed storage system, and then even as they exit, the reducers can still access this data. Now, it's not clear that existing storage systems are a good fit for this kind of ephemeral data sharing. If we think about existing object storage systems, key value stores, they're often designed for more longer-term storage, or they're not necessarily designed to match the elasticity of these serverless applications. So this motivates us to do an analysis and answer the following questions. What are the ephemeral I/O characteristics of serverless analytics applications? We're going to look at their throughput and capacity requirements and the granularity of their I/O accesses. How do applications perform with existing systems? So we'll take a look at some examples like S3 and Redis. And what storage media, DRAM, flash, or disk, seems to be the best fit to satisfy I/O requirements at the lowest cost? More generally, we're looking at the suitability of existing systems to address the needs of ephemeral data sharing and serverless analytics, and whether we need a new system to address these needs. So we start off by looking at three different categories of applications and their ephemeral I/O patterns. The first is a distributed compilation, and we use a framework being developed at Stanford called GG. So just like you might do make-j8 on an 8-core machine to compile some source code, why not do make-j1000 and use the parallelism you have in the cloud? So this is what we do with GG. We compile the CMake source code, and here we're plotting the throughput over time, with a dotted line showing the read throughput, or the write throughput, and the solid line showing the read. And what we can see is at the beginning of the job, we have a high degree of parallelism because each lambda is looking at individual and independent source files and compiling them. And this results in high throughput. Whereas the later stages of the job, which involve archiving and linking, These are serialized because they depend on outputs from the previous stage lambdas. And so this low parallelism translates also into a low I/O rate. And the capacity is relatively low. It's under 1 gigabyte here. The next category of applications we look at are MapReduce applications. And for this, we run a canonical sort application with a 100 gigabyte data set, which also means we have 100 gigabytes to shuffle. And the interesting thing here is that this is a very I/O intensive workload. So we run with 500 lambdas concurrently in this example, and we see we need up to 7.5 gigabytes per second of cumulative throughput to satisfy the I/O for this application. Then we also look at a video analytics application. And this one also operates kind of in two stages, where the first stage reads input video chunks and does decoding and writes these decoded video frames to ephemeral storage, and then launches a second stage of lambdas. So we're using lambda chaining in this application. And the second stage is reading this data and performing a deep learning MXNet classification. So this is a both I/O and compute intensive workload. And we see that at the beginning, because we're launching this job, these lambdas all in parallel, they're kind of all synchronized in the first stage, but because of the lambda chaining and variances in the completion of the first stage, we see more staggering for the second stage lambdas that are doing the reading. Now, in addition to looking at the throughput characteristics over time and the capacity requirements, we also look at the granularity of I/O accesses. So this is a CDF showing the I/O sizes that we observe for these three applications. And the takeaway here is that we have a wide range of I/O sizes, ranging from several bytes to hundreds of megabytes. And so what this means for ephemeral storage is that we need a system that can both support low latency, this is particularly important for the small requests, and high throughput, which is particularly important for the large requests. So next we take a look at some of the existing storage systems that people are using today for serverless analytics. And there are many different categories of systems and many different aspects we could characterize them along, but we focus on three main categories. The first one being cloud-managed object storage systems. So our example of this is Amazon S3. And the advantage of these systems is that they provide essentially a serverless abstraction to storage. Users pay only for the capacity and throughput that they use, and the cloud provider is managing all the resources. The disadvantage, as we'll see, is there's a high latency overhead and also often limited throughput. We also take a look at in-memory key-value storage systems like Redis and Memcache. And the advantage here is we get higher performance, but it does come at the higher cost of using DRAM. And in addition, these systems do not automatically manage resources for users, so users have to actually manually provision these instances and configure and scale them appropriately. And then in order to kind of look at different storage media, we also take an example of a distributed flash-based storage system. And for this, we use the Apache Crail storage system because it was designed from the ground up for high-performance access to data with low durability requirements. So this matches the ephemeral data use case. And we build a flash tier for this using Reflex, which is a system that allows us to enable high-performance access to flash storage over commodity Ethernet networks in the cloud. So we look at these three different applications and three different storage systems and analyze the characteristics that we see. So we start with the distributed compilation job, and this is, out of the three applications we study, the only one that shows really sensitivity to latency. And this is because it reads a lot of small source files. So the graph here is showing the job runtime, and on the x-axis we have the number of concurrent lambdas. So in the make-j, this would be like your dash j value. What's the maximum concurrency the user is specifying? And we're comparing performance with the Redis storage system that provides lower latency and the S3 storage system. And we can see that at low concurrency, we get much higher performance when using Redis. But as the concurrency increases, the choice of storage for ephemeral I/O starts to not really matter. And the reason for this is because the job actually becomes bottlenecked or dominated by the sequential portion of the application. And so to understand this, let's look at a breakdown of what lambdas are doing during different stages of the execution. So this graph is showing lambdas on the x-axis ordered in their order of invocation. And the blue in this graph is showing the breakdown for each lambda, the time that it spends reading ephemeral data. Green is compute, so the actual compiling. And red is the ephemeral write time. And this is using high concurrency. We use 650 concurrent lambdas and the S3 storage system. And we can see that the actual job takes 30 seconds to complete. Now let's compare this to what happens when, at this high concurrency level, we use Redis as our storage system. What we see is that each lambda indeed spends less time on ephemeral I/O. There's less blue and red in this picture. But the job runtime is still the same as with S3. This was what we observed in that original graph. And the reason for this is because runtime is limited by dependencies on lambdas that are compute-bound, and we've highlighted some of those in this plot. So actually, these final tasks in the job, which are handling archiving and linking, require that this data be passed in. And so the lesson here is that applications with inherently limited parallelism are more likely to become bottlenecked on lambda side compute and network bottlenecks because these lambdas, at least in the current infrastructure, are WIMPy workers. This is more likely to become the bottleneck versus ephemeral storage, distributed storage side limitations. So next we look at an application that is highly parallel and also very I/O intensive, and this is the MapReduce sort application. So we run this experiment with 250 lambdas in the first set of bars, 500 concurrent lambdas, and 1,000. And the original input and the final output data of the jobs, we always store in S3 because we assume this needs to be stored longer term. And what we're really interested in comparing here is the dark blue bars, which is the time spent on ephemeral I/O. And we compare this for the S3 storage system, Redis, and the Crail Reflex flash-based data store. And this is the average time breakdown per lambda. So what we notice is that S3 does not provide sufficient throughput. We're spending more time on ephemeral I/O sharing when we use S3 compared to the other two storage systems where we have the control to provision as much network bandwidth as we want in the Redis and Crail Reflex clusters. Meanwhile, S3 throughput sort of is what it is. We also see that as we scale up the number of lambdas, the reasons why these data points are missing here is because we actually got request rate limit errors from S3, telling us to exponentially back off. Now, although you can open a support case with Amazon and you probably can see slightly higher performance with S3, the point is the system does not automatically and elastically scale to adjust to the user's needs. The other thing to note here is the comparison between the performance with Redis, which uses DRAM, and Crail Reflex, which uses flash. We actually see very similar performance here with these two storage medium. And this is because this application is throughput intensive. And we see a similar trend with the video analytics application, which has both significant I/O and compute intensity. So this application works in two stages. There's the first stage that is decoding frames, and we see that S3 provides lower performance than the other two storage systems. And the MXNet classification stage, we see that we again see very similar performance with flash and DRAM here. The next question we wanted to answer is, what kind of storage media is appropriate? And so a storage system can always support arbitrarily more throughput if we're willing to pay more for resources to scale the system up or out. The more interesting question to ask is which media is a good choice to allow us to satisfy application requirements at a low cost? And one aspect or element of this question is to analyze the throughput versus capacity ratios of the applications and see how they compare to the throughput capacity ratios that are typical for these storage media. So on the right here, we do some back-of-the-envelope calculations of throughput-to-capacity ratios based on devices that are on the market today. And on the left, we've taken a graph similar to the one we saw earlier in this talk, where we looked at throughput over time, and we've now divided by the capacity, ephemeral data capacity over time. And what we see is that the application throughput-to-capacity ratios for these applications are somewhere between the DRAM and flash regimes. But remember, we also saw that application performance, particularly for these throughput-intensive apps, was very similar with Flash and DRAM. And so since Flash offers us lower cost per bit, it's a natural choice as a storage medium. Now, as cloud networking infrastructure in these serverless offerings improves, we expect that the performance of remote access to DRAM and Flash will differ significantly, and we expect that DRAM will play a more and more important role. So putting this all together, we summarize our findings by coming up with a list of the desired properties we would like to see in a storage system for ephemeral I/O and serverless analytics. So the first property up here is high throughput and I/O rates. We saw, for example, that S3 was not able to scale to the throughput requirements of very parallel applications. And one of the main reasons for using Lambdas in the first place is cases where you want to be able to run lots of threads in parallel. Low latency is also important, particularly for jobs that are issuing small IOs. And we want to be able to have fine grain and elastic scaling to match the elasticity of the nature of these applications, which go from one to thousands of threads in a short period of time. We also want to have automatic write sizing, because remember, serverless computing is already abstracting VM and instance management from users for their compute and memory resources of their applications. So we want a similar story for storage, because these users don't want to have the burden of configuring instances for the purposes of ephemeral I/O. And this automatic write sizing should have the goal of not only improving performance or meeting performance demands, but also doing so at low cost, so that users are charged only for what they use. So existing systems that we looked at provide some, but not quite all, of these properties. And so our analysis motivates the design of a distributed ephemeral storage service that is both able to meet performance demands, but also can automatically and fine-grained scale to the requirements of applications. We saw that ephemeral I/O requirements, of course, depend on the job's sensitivity to latency, its inherent parallelism, and its I/O versus compute intensity. And then we also observed that flash storage is an appealing media of choice for ephemeral I/O performance. Thank you very much, and I'm happy to take questions.
Questions?
Hi, nice talk. I just wanted to know, I'm not too familiar with file system, with ephemeral storage. What sort of storage interface is available to the Lambdas? Is this like a key value store or a file system? What do they use? Mm-hmm. And following up, is there a difference in that you've seen if they use something else?
Mm-hmm. So the API, you can write code to access different kinds of APIs. So for example, you can access the regular S3 APIs from a Lambda. You can also run your own storage system in, like for example, in our Amazon environment, we run in a virtual private cloud, we run a instance of Redis or the Crail Reflex storage system, and you can set up rules to allow your Lambdas to access this.
And these are key value stores or
yes,
file
so
systems?
So the Redis, for example, is a key value store. But the API is sort of, there's nothing fundamental in the Lambda infrastructure that's limiting the API you use to storage.
And would you think if there would be a difference in terms of all the performance that you looked at? Like if I were to tomorrow build a new serverless system, should I, would there be a difference? Like should I let users even have a file system? Maybe it's slower or not allowing me to scale as much as I would need. Like is there a difference?
Right, so I think there's a lot of questions baked in there. It's not just about the API. But in general, I think what we found is for at least the applications that we studied, a simple get put API seemed to be sufficient, and it was nice to have it simplistic and not have to worry about scaling. But there's nothing to say that a file system wouldn't be able to provide that kind of performance.
All right, thank you.